Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Bigamex Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Racetech. Whether it's engine components or chassis components, suspension is so important to feeling more comfortable on the motorcycle. When you're feeling comfortable, you go faster. That's the secret sauce when it comes to Racetech. And they also do engine work. In fact, some of the factory teams in Monster Energy Supercross are using their engine components and having their engines built by Racetech. So yes. Good enough for factory superstars, good enough for you. Call them today and mention Big MX Radio to save yourself some money on Racetech. I am your host, Brad Gabhart, with me on the line for the very first time on the podcast. I hope that he's going to be a repeat offender, but that completely is determinant on how this conversation goes. He's an absolute legend in all things motorsports. Ralph Jaheen, welcome to the Big MX Radio podcast.
Thanks, Brad. I finally got invited. I'm glad to be here.
No doubt. Well, you and I have chatted on the floor of Monster Energy Supercross trackside a number of times when I do some of those track walk interviews and stuff like that, but I've never reached out to actually have you as a guest on the show, so welcome. This is it.
Well, thanks. I mean, I love doing this sort of thing. You know, I mean, I love bench racing and talking with the fans about what's going on in our favorite sports, and of course, racing is a big part of that, and Supercross for me is right at the top of that.
Certainly. And you were the voice of it for so, so many years, so many iconic calls. Maybe we'll get into those, in a minute here, but, do you follow the series quite closely to this day? Are you still locked in on Saturdays?
Yeah. I mean, as often as I can, I do have work things. Like the last couple of weekends, I've had some races I've been off. You know, if you're paying, I'm saying, as I always jokingly say, you know, you got to go where the money sends you, right? So, if I'm working, then I can't tune in, but I do stay on top of it, obviously. I follow everybody on social media. I'm talking to friends. Fro and I talk literally every day. Still talking with RC and, you know, other friends in the sport. So I'm constantly hearing and talking with people about what's going on in the sport and staying on top of it. And then, of course, the last few years, 4 years now, I've called World Supercross in the fall. So because of that, you have to have an idea of what happened during the Supercross season here domestically, because a lot of those guys come race with us internationally. So you need to kind of know who's been doing what, how they are injury-wise, all that sort of stuff.
You got to know the storylines. And speaking of which, speed sports.
I just love it. You know, Supercross is truly one of the coolest forms of motorsports. And I've called everything out there from swamp buggies in Naples, Florida, to Formula One in the streets of Monaco. So I've seen and called just about everything that's out there. And people ask me all the time, they're like, if you could just do one thing, what would you do? And I said, well, if you're doing just one race, the Indy 500 or the Knoxville Nationals are the two best races for just one day. But if you're calling a season's worth of competition, the best thing you can do for a full season is Supercross by far.
Really? That's interesting to hear you say that. And especially, we could do a whole podcast on just some of the most obscure things that you've called, because your history behind a microphone is about as decorated as you can have, especially in motorsports. And it's about as diverse as you can possibly imagine as well. Especially when you first get going, you have to take any opportunity to get behind the microphone. Like you said, if they're paying, I'm saying, and yeah, I can't even imagine what would be the most obscure event that you found yourself grabbing a microphone for.
Well, let's see. Swamp buggies in Naples, Florida is pretty obscure on the racing side of things. I just did a snowmobile drag race this past weekend on a frozen lake in Wisconsin. That was a little different. I did the Yukon Jack World Arm Wrestling Championships in downtown San Francisco once. That might be one of the more unique ones.
Fair enough. Yeah, that's the least amount of horsepower, but definitely maybe the most unique. Yeah, it's like I said, we will definitely, like, I think I need to get my ducks in a row for a proper, like look back at your entire career. But, for you, like, working, honing your craft year over year, it's been quite the journey, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm now, 40 years on a microphone of some sort calling racing. Starting on a PA system when I was in college, a California State University, Chico, calling races around Northern California where I grew up in Sacramento. And this is my 38th year on national television.
There you go.
Which I can't believe I can tell you that. Either one of those numbers is just staggering to me because when you start this, no different than if you start as a racer, you don't expect it to be that long. You know, you think, man, if I get a year or two out of this, I'm incredibly lucky and blessed, right? 38 years, it's like, holy cow, how did that happen, you know? It's really been amazing and a true blessing and very, very lucky to have done it. The people I've met along the way, the places I've gotten to go, the events I've seen, the moments I've seen and been able to be a part of is just remarkable. That's why when guys like yourself post clips of things that I've called and you go, man, it's amazing how, just like Daytona this past week, and a lot of guys were, including yourself, posting clips from moments at Daytona, and you just start thinking back, wow, that's so many cool years of things that have happened at Daytona that I was there on the microphone. You're not the show. You're just adding to it. You're just helping to give a little more substance to that moment, and that to be ingrained with that moment forever is incredible.
Yeah, you're totally right. The racing itself is something to behold on its own. But then when an expert, someone who has that voice, who can bring it to life, can explain to those at home, maybe it's their first Supercross they're watching, maybe they've watched 1,000 Supercrosses, but either way, explaining to them the gravity of this moment, how big it is for a guy like Eli Tomac, which you announced a number of his wins at a place like Daytona, can make it 8 events won at Daytona, more than any athlete in any motorsport over Richard Petty. That's incredible. And to be able to communicate that in real time to those listening at home and get them hyped up, well, that's the magic right there.
Yeah, the hyped up part, I think, is one of the things I've really kind of hung my hat on. I'm an energy guy, right? Like you talked about, you know, can you explain, you know, the analysis part? The analysis part is for the analyst on the broadcast. For me, that would have been Jeff or Ricky, whoever it might have been working with me at the time. My job is to set the table, set the stage for the moment, explain why the moment is important, not how it happened necessarily, or why it happened, but why it's important. Let Ricky and Jeff talk about why that guy was able to do what he did, because he came out of the last corner a little bit quicker because he was in a different gear, whatever the case might have been, right? That's what they know, because they were the ones who were there and did it before. They're the true experts. But what I always hear from people is, man, when you would get excited, I would get excited because I knew that was a moment worth getting excited for, you know, and that's the kind of thing that really makes you feel good. You know, when people come up and they say, I could be in the other room and I could hear you get excited and I would come running in because I knew I wasn't going to miss something, you know, that's really the kind of thing that when you look back on your career and you go, that's cool. I was really able to convey that through to the audience, because when you're doing television, you're just in that booth. You don't know if anybody likes what you're saying or is even listening to what you're saying. You know, it's, you get no response back. Now with social media, when the show is over, you hear a little bit, obviously, good or bad. But when you're on to PA, then you have the crowd out in front of you. You get a little bit more instant reaction. But all those years on television, you don't know. So afterwards, when you get those comments, it's really nice.
Yeah, I'm sure you every single weekend, you must run into somebody who tells you about how they grew up on bar to bar videos with your call and all of those videos, or they grew up watching races with Ryan Villopoto and Ryan Dungey and Jason Lawrence and all those guys and Ricky Carmichael and James Stewart. Like, the fact that you got to announce Supercross in what I would consider to be maybe the most explosive, if I can give it a label it as of an era, in you had like the end of two strokes, the rise of four strokes, the basically tracks becoming what they are today. You like basically just like jump cut back to 2005, a lot of the features you see in those races are still prevalent, still used on track maps to this very day. And then you had absolute Goliaths as far as athletes, to paint the picture for you. You explained it all. But the sport was at its absolute zenith with the characters and the technology, and we were still carbureted for the most part. There was like a rawness to it. It's like, what I'm trying to say is the time period in which you were the voice of it was very unique. You must look back on it as something that's very cherished for you.
Oh, without a doubt. I literally hear about it every weekend. You're right. No matter where I am, no matter what kind of race I'm at, it doesn't have to be anything to do with motorcycles. This past weekend up at the snowmobile race in the middle of a frozen lake in Wisconsin, and I got people coming up and all they want to talk about is Supercross. Because that's it. It really resonated with people. And I think for a variety of reasons, not just because of what I was doing or what the racers are doing on the track, but the whole thing kind of came together. You know, we were the ones at Speed Channel and Fox that took Supercross live the entire season.
Yes.
And that became that Saturday night Supercross party, as we used to call it. And the entire country got into it. It became like Monday Night Football when Monday Night Football first hit the airwaves back in the 70s, and you had Howard Cosell and Don Meredith and Frank Gifford. Monday Night Football was, man, it was unbelievable. There's nothing like it prior to that.
It was revolutionary.
Oh, totally. And everybody tuned in, and all the celebrities were showing up. You know, John Lennon's coming into the booth, and you know, you got interactions with Muhammad Ali, and all these people had to be there because it was Monday Night Football, you know, and Howard and Dandy Don and Frank Gifford, those guys became icons of the NFL because of that.
Wasn't John Lennon's assassination also announced on Monday Night Football?
Yeah. It sure
was. By Howard Cosell.
Yes, you're right.
Wow.
And we kind of became a similar thing for racing, not just Supercross or Moto, but for racing in general, because there was nothing else going on like that, you know? Supercross takes place in a time of the year when everything else is still kind of dormant, right? You're January to May. So that first big chunk of the Supercross season, January to certainly April, is really kind of dormant for the rest of the racing world because local racetracks haven't thawed out yet all across the country. They're not all open and pulling people away from their TV to come to their local short track or strip or whatever it is. So people are still at home looking for something on. And there we sat, and we had great racing action, unbelievable racing, tremendous competition, and we were live on their TV right in their living room. And we made it fun. Supercross on a Saturday night on Speed Channel and Fox was just fun. It was lighthearted. It was a good time. Ricky Froh and I joking around, having a great time. Aaron Bates, Jenny Taff, Juliana. I mean, what was not to enjoy about those broadcasts, right?
Oh, and yeah. Then, you had Juliana Daniels reading our tweets. You got me and my buddies putting our KX450s in our living room for at least one evening.
That's the thing I wanted to get to. When we started that, the whole thing changed. I mean, it was unbelievable. When guys started sending in pictures, there was two I'll never forget. There was one, a guy hung his bike from the ceiling of his apartment or his house, and he crawled up on it. And I sat there and I thought, do you know how much effort it took that guy all week
to
get it figured out and everything put in place and he could hang the bike from the ceiling and not
have this is not a mechanical engineer, too, by the way.
Oh, no. This is somebody his buddies and a couple of six-packs figuring it out, right?
Yeah.
And the other one that got me was we had a guy who put his bike in his shower, stood it up on the rear wheel in the shower, and got up on the bike. And I'm thinking, holy cow, you know, who figures that out and doesn't destroy the shower in the process of getting it in there? All for 15 seconds of fame, having your picture seen, you know, on a national broadcast. And you don't even see the guy because he's got his helmet on. So who knows who it is?
Exactly. And like, we know he's single. We know he's single because there's not a... There's not a female in the world that's like, hey, babe, I'm thinking about putting the dirt bike in the shower. She's like, all right, well, I'm moving out before that happens.
Yeah, good idea. Yeah. And then we started getting, you know, text messages into the show from guys like Jimmy Johnson and Mario Andretti and Jeff Gordon and everybody who was watching the broadcast and loving the racing. And I mean, it just exploded. And we would have production meetings, you know, during the week. And I remember saying once at the beginning of the year, I don't remember which year it was, and we were on this production call, and I said, you know, we were going around the horn, what storylines do we want to follow? And I said, you know, I really don't even need to worry about it. I said, because the racing's going to take care of itself. They're going to drop the gate. 22 guys are going to land rush to the first corner. Chaos is going to ensue, and the racing's going to be spectacular. That's going to handle itself. All we need to do is not screw up and just have a good time with it. If we do that, we're golden. And for 15 years or so, we did. And it was.
Yeah. How do you not get romantic about motocross and supercross? You got 22 guys screaming for one corner. If it happens to be right-handed, neither one of them can be on their break when they get there. You got guys between the ages of 18 and 35, all with the biggest egos in that they've ever raced. Every single one of these guys, wherever they came from, all they ever did was win. They were probably in a class where all they did was win. And reality is there's going to be only one person that lights the candles at the end of the night. And none of them are excited, are happy if it's not them. You're totally right. The sport itself is just so easy to fall in love with. All you guys had to make sure to do is call the action and make sure it's fun. And it was.
And it was. Yeah. And we had the right chemistry. And that is the hardest thing in television to do, find the right chemistry. And we found it. And we worked hard to cultivate it. We become the best of friends. I mean, Fro is truly my brother. To the day we die, we will be connected. Love that guy. And, you know, it was very, very special.
That's awesome. How early after meeting Jenny Taft did you figure that she would be long gone out of motorsports?
No, we knew, unfortunately, I say that unfortunately for us, fantastic for Jenny. I mean, she's a dear friend. I think yep. Very highly of her. Her husband, Matt, their daughter, just so happy for them. As soon as we saw Jenny's skill set, it's like, okay.
Oh, you're going on.
Yeah. American darling. Fox would be stupid not to take her and just disappear.
Yeah. Just bring her to the biggest audience possible as quickly as possible. Yeah, it's great.
Have her doing the biggest college game of the week every week. But to me, if Fox is doing the Super Bowl, she should be on it.
Yeah, absolutely. No, she's fantastic. I told that to her face. Anaheim won 2017. I was like, you're awesome here. We don't deserve you. You're going to go on to bigger and better things as quickly as possible, because the talent that was there, her attention to detail. I never saw her without a clipboard or her. She always had a notebook with her, and she's just like, she's more diligent with her, like basically documenting the sport than the people who document the sport.
Oh yeah. No, and she loved and loves Supercross. I guarantee you she still watches as often as she can, no doubt about it.
Absolutely. What's going on with speed sport these days? Tell me about speed sport and why people need to spend more time consuming the content.
Well, so speed sport started in 1934. To put it in motorcycle terms, speed sport to four-wheel racing is what Cycle News was to the two-wheeled world. It was
very cool.
The bottom of where you went to find out who was winning, who was losing, what changes were being made, new sponsors, crew chief changes, all that sort of stuff. It was a traditional, just like Cycle News, fold in half, black and white newspaper, came in your mailbox, you subscribed. And this is obviously way before the internet. Speed Sport started in 1934, so it's 90 plus years old. The guy who made it really what it became was a gentleman by the name of Chris Economaki, legendary motorsports journalist, the godfather of American motorsports journalism. Chris and I had become friends, and he was a mentor and a colleague on television. And when he passed, the family didn't want to run Speed Sport anymore. It had been family owned and operated. So they were looking for somebody to shepherd the brand forward. So myself and another partner who I worked together with at Speed Channel, we bought the brand and took it, got rid of the newspaper. Did a magazine for a little while, but even magazines, as you know, are fading out, kind of going away. and we were TV guys, so we wanted to have television presence. So we took this logo that was so well known in the motorsports world and took it from the print side and the internet side. We have a website, speedsport.com. We took it from that and put it on television and started our own TV network.
Okay.
Called Speed Sport One. There's the Speed Sport One, which is a fast channel, which is free ad-supported streaming television. If you have Amazon Prime, Fubo, Plex, the Roku channel, any of those, you've already got it. It's free. There's no subscription fee, no pay-per-view, none of that. It's 24/7 racing all the time of all kinds.
Very cool.
And then Speed Sport 2 is a paid streaming service. That's a little different. If you want to buy in to watch a particular event, you can do that. But Speed Sport 1 is reaching over 200 million active users a month, and it's 100% free.
Wow. I would love to be an ad sales guy on that.
Yeah. And you can watch it on your phone, your television, your iPad, your computer, whatever connected device you've got.
Very cool. Very cool. I'll have to check that out. Actually, completely off topic, but sort of on topic because it's four wheel related. I got my very first taste of non-wing sprint car racing last year. There's a local guy, Sean Wedge. He's an absolute beautician, which is a professional beauty for us Canadians. And, he bought a race car. He's well into his 60s. He does race this damn thing. But he said, he's like, what size are you? I'm like, I'm probably a large in just about everything. He's like, I got shoes. I got a spire suit. I got a helmet and a Hans device. I want you to race this car. I'm like, well, why not? Go down there to, have you ever been to, Devil's Lake, North Dakota?
I've done sprint car races in North Dakota, but I've not been to Devil's Lake.
You're probably at Fargo or Grand Forks. Fargo and Grand Forks have World Outlaws and stuff like that. They do. I haven't gotten to that level just quite yet, but I made the feature because there wasn't enough to send anybody home.
Listen to you.
Yeah. And I ended up finishing, only one lap down in my 8-lap feature. So, hey,
good.
Look out, I guess. Maybe I'll have an article typed up for Speed Sport.
There you go. I've driven a wing 410 sprint car before on a couple of occasions, and I know all about sprint car racing. I've actually got inducted into the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was a real honor. So I know all about sprint car racing.
You and Steve Kinzer.
Yeah, the king. He's stout. So I can appreciate what you did. And people are like, oh, he was a lap down and 8 laps. Listen, you don't understand how difficult it is just to get through the first two corners. That's good work.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, the leaders came by and split me like I was standing still. I'm excited to check out, what Speed Sport has to offer. Free service and a 24-hour racing. Who can argue with that? I mentioned before we hit play on this or record on this is that I'm still feeling under the weather myself, knowing full well that you have been behind the microphone probably at least once a month, every month for the last 40 years. What's your flu game? Like, you didn't have to put up 100 points that game, but like, there's got to be a time where you were like so under the weather where you're like, I'm going to grab this microphone and tell people what's going on.
Yeah, you know, I don't really recall one where I was sick that I couldn't perform. I'm sure there was one or two where I was a little under the weather, but plowed through it. But the one that stands out that I always remember when something like this comes up, we had done Supercross in Phoenix at Chase Field on Saturday night. And on Sunday, I was going to call a boxing match in Spokane, Washington. And there was something about the dirt in Arizona in Chase Field, which is where the Diamondbacks play.
Right.
That every time we went there and did that event, I never felt it when we were in Glendale where the Cardinals play, but at Chase Field, there was something different about the dirt and it always got to my voice and I would just get through the night calling Supercross. Well, I knew it was hitting me. So by the time I went to get on the plane to go to the Spokane event on Sunday morning, I thought, oh boy, I'm in trouble. I got to Spokane and I couldn't talk. I mean, there was just squeak coming out, you know, open the mouth and just a little dust would fly out and that was about it. So I was doing the best I could to make my way through that. And our stage manager ran to the bar, got a little bit of whiskey, came back and said, hey, just sip every now and then. And I did, and it got me through, brought everything back a little bit, and I was able to power through. But, yeah, that's probably the worst one.
Not exactly warm salt water, which is typically I probably would have grabbed for first. But, hey, yes, a stiff drink can help you along in a time of need as well.
I couldn't go get anything. I was trapped to the to the booth, you know, and fortunately we weren't on a, you know, major network or anything like that. So it was okay.
How did you develop the voice? Because it's iconic. It's very unique. You have, your delivery kind of comes from I sort of developed my radio voice from you, actually, is because that's who I grew up listening to. And I like, short story of how I ended up on the broadcast to begin with at all, was doing local races, and I would just go up and do my best Ralph Shaheen. And I always noticed that your voice comes from like deep in your chest. That's how you're able to project. And I think that comes from you originally starting out as a PA announcer, I'd assume. And like, that always is sort of something that I've always had in my back pocket as far as being able to sort of cut through a crowd and make sure the voice stands out. But how did you develop yours? Is there anyone specifically that you sort of, you like their style and then you kind of put your own spin on it? How did that come to be?
I have no clue.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Good question, Brad.
It is a good question. And the answer is legit in that what you hear is strictly God-given. I have not taken any kind of voice classes or worked on anything. I don't do any kind of weird exercises or stand in my head before a show or anything like that. This is just, it is what it is. You get what you get. The excitement you get out of me is pure to the core. I don't fake any of that. If you hear me get excited, it's because I am. Because I feel sports, specifically racing, I mean, how can you not get excited about it, right?
Right.
I mean, it's awesome. So that's legitimately just me. I've never done anything to enhance it or change it or get it deeper or softer or anything like that. This is just what you get. And I'm like this 24/7. This is just who I am. But I do think, to your other point, the PA announcing definitely helped give volume to it. You know, because you do have to cut through the engine noise. There's a lot of places I announced when I was doing so much. I still do some PA work to this day because I think it's important.
I love it.
To keep those skill sets, you know, somewhat refined, if you will.
Yep.
But there's a lot of events when you're younger and you're doing that, small venues, buildings with a lot of noise in them, that you have to push through all that so the fan can hear you, terrible speakers and all that kind of stuff you have to overcome. And I think I probably developed some of that volume by doing that.
Fair enough. I wanted to talk about some of the best feedback that you got as you're coming up through the ranks and going all the way back to the early 80s, which for those who are like a moto historian like myself, you can find clips. I think the oldest clip I found is 88, if I'm not mistaken, out of Supercross.
Yeah, that would have been Tampa.
Yes.
The big sombrero.
Yep.
Yeah. The old Tampa Stadium. That was the first Supercross I ever did. And I remember it was kind of funny to me when I started doing Supercross for Speed Channel when they first got it, and people were like, oh, you know, why is this guy? He's been all stock car racing and sprint cars. Why is he coming to Supercross? He doesn't know anything. I said, dude, I did Supercross 20 years ago.
Yeah.
People had his generations had changed. They didn't realize I'd been around it that far back, you know, doing it for ESPN and then for TNN, all the years at Daytona on TNN. ESPN, I did the Supercross series in Florida and Charlotte, variety of different places. So I had been around Supercross a fair amount before we started doing it full time on Speed Channel and Fox. But yeah, 88 would have been the first one. That's when it was the Coors Extra Gold series.
Beautiful. We used to have Coors, and we also had Camel cigarettes and yep. Wrangler jeans. I don't know why in 2026 we have less mainstream sponsors for Supercross than we do now. Maybe that like that I think some salespeople have to answer to that one, but it's pretty wild to see like the type of backing that was available to a series like that in 40 years ago.
Yeah, it was, the cigarette companies came in, and, man, they couldn't advertise traditionally anymore.
Right.
So they were looking for other places to go, and R.J. Reynolds got in with NASCAR, and that really kind of...
That was the Winston Cup, of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course, they took over the Winston Cup series, and then all the short tracks around the country that NASCAR had affiliation with came Winston Racing Series events. And of course, RJ Reynolds also owned Camel. So they're like, well, if this works for Winston, I bet it can work for Camel. So they took Winston to NASCAR and to the NHRA.
Right.
Draft racing. And they took Camel and brought it over to two wheels, put it on Supercross, flat track, and all the AMA road racing. So RJ Reynolds was everywhere.
Yeah. That was, stimulating the motorsports world with cigarette money, which we enjoyed it while it lasted. Reason why I wanted to ask if there was anybody that had some great advice for you or that sort of shaped your path, is that also your career has also existed during the social media era, which also allows you to reach more people than ever before. But that also means that a lot of people can reach back out. Sometimes in a negative way. How do you block that stuff out, man? Because I know, as I'm sure in person, I'm sure you get a lot of like great compliments and people tell you about a race that they remember hearing. But also there's a ton of bullshit online where people say some mean things. Maybe they even mean them. How do you cut that out and just sort of like just water off a duck's back?
Yeah. So, you know, when it first started, when the, you know, Twitter and then Instagram and everything got going, you didn't see it really on Facebook because most of the people that you were communicating with on Facebook, for the most part, were friends.
Yes.
Right? So your friends are not going to necessarily rip you the way some fan who might say.
They might have constructive criticism, but not outright just
pain.
Yeah, shit talking you.
Yeah. So when Twitter and Instagram got going, that's when it really started that you had that opening for people who wanted to say something negative could do it behind a veil and not be seen. And they could feel keyboard warrior, you know, strength to say whatever they wanted to say, good, bad, or indifferent. And you started reading it. And yeah, I mean, everybody's human. So the first few times it hits, you're kind of like, oh, wow, really? You know? That's, man, it takes you back, you know, and you got to get through that a little bit and go, you know what? No, that's not, this guy's just being an idiot. He's saying whatever. He's feeling emboldened because he's behind the wall. Nobody can get to him. He's mm-hmm. just spewing hate because he spews hate to everybody.
Right. And a lot of times, I'll interrupt you, but a lot of times those people, if you actually took a moment and spoke with them, they're probably at a really bad place in their life. And like, they have a lot of really tough things going on and they're lashing out because they don't even like to see anybody doing anything enjoyable or fun. Like they're in that place in their life. And it's actually quite sad.
It really is. And unfortunately we see it in a lot of ways in this world, not just impacting, critiquing or criticizing entertainers or sports personalities or whatever it might be, but they're doing it. Kids are doing it to each other and bullying online. And I mean, it's sad, right? Like you said, it's out of control and sad. Fortunately, I'm at a stage and an age where you're mature enough that you can push it behind you and you have enough support around you that you realize that's what it is and that it's not reality. And I'll tell you the best thing that happened really was when it all came to an end with NBC that first year. And ever since then, I was absolutely dumbfounded by the amount of people that reached out in a variety of ways, whether it was in person, through social media, whatever it might have been, to say how much they had enjoyed my time leading the broadcast and how much they missed me back. And I was just blown away by that because, again, you don't see or hear that when you're doing the broadcast. And right. The only judge you have as to how you're doing is you get hired to come back and do it again.
Right.
If your boss says, we want you back, you assume you did okay. There's never a guarantee, but you assume you did good enough. But, man, the things that I saw from people and I hear from people, I can't tell you how much it warms your heart to go, wow, you know, that it really, I'm thrilled that it left such a positive impact out there for so many people. That it's unbelievable.
Well, that's encouraging to hear because, yeah, there's always going to be negativity out there. People will let you know if they're not happy with the performance or what's coming out of your mouth. I often subscribe to the fact that if there's something out there media-wise that you don't happen to agree with, it's probably not for you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's actually not there for you at all, and not everything's for you. But also, at the same time, it's encouraging to hear that there's so many people who did enjoy. And, like, a lot of people, they often say people don't leave good comments or leave good reviews. But then in a moment where fans sort of see the opportunity to hear Ralph Sheheen call Supercross maybe coming to an end, or maybe it changes. Now you're with World Supercross. They're able to enjoy that. The people that were able to reach out and say, hey, man, like, I liked what you were doing. I'm going to miss hearing you on Saturday nights. That's got to warm your heart as somebody because, you can't talk to those people after Saturday evening broadcast to get their feedback and tell them, and they don't get an opportunity to tell you them how much you enjoyed it. But to be able to get that must have been a great pat on the back for you. And honestly, just understanding that your legacy is a positive one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I love it when somebody comes up and they want to talk about Supercross and they have a memory or a moment. They go, man, I remember this one. And that was so cool. I'm just like, that's so awesome. You know, I mean, what cannot be better than that? There's nothing better than that. Not in my business.
So we can maybe get a little long winded here, but you told me you had extra time. So I'm going to take it anyway. Motorsports and motorcycles in the early 2000s, even throughout the 2000s, there was a lot like you had Two Wheel Tuesday on Speed Vision, like Speed Channel, Speed Vision. I think it was originally called Speed Vision. There's nothing quite like it today. You used to sit down and they would have what was the guy that used to host? Dave Despain, and then it switched to
Greg White.
Greg White. And then you also had, there was stuff for motocross, there was stuff for flat trackers, all that stuff. And I had an intimate knowledge of who the top AMA street bike guys like Jake Zemke, guys like Jake, Duhamel, Nikki Hayden, all of that has gone away. Why did it go away? Why hasn't it come back? Like, what about motorcycles in 2026 are not as entertaining or not as, like, covered, it seems, as it is today? Or is it so saturated now that you can't have that same that same delivery? That makes sense?
Yeah, it's just about money. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Yeah.
You know, those shows are not cheap to produce. There's a lot of expense involved. We have a network. I mean, we'd love to put a show like that up on Speed Sport One. Just need the finances to do that, you know? And it takes a fair chunk of change to do one of those every week.
Right.
You know, there's a lot that goes to it that people don't know about, just like a race team. You know, you think, oh, the guy just shows up, gets on the motorcycle and rides. No, there's, you know, endless hours put into getting the bike and the team ready and prepared and, you know, at the top of their game so that a guy like Ricky or James or whoever, Tomac, Sexton can get on that bike and go to the front of the field, right? Same thing with the show. You know, you got to have editors and audio people and photographers, all that stuff that goes into it, compiling all that, writing it, getting all put together before me or anybody else stands in front of the microphone and says, hi, welcome to, you know, This Week on Two Wheels.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's, it seemed like there was just so much, like very valuable content that was created on a weekly basis. I think now things are a little bit too disposable. Like as soon as things can be off your timeline, they're gone. Like it's really interesting to see like how like, cause in the early 2000s, late 90s, 2000s, you had like motocross videos that were coming out. Like there'd be like, as a kid, like myself, there was maybe five or six videos about 35 to 45 minutes in length that you could watch, every year. As far as in being able to consume the sport, and like me and many other kids my ages would just like turn them over, and like the bar to bar videos, we'd watch them and watch them again and watch them again because there wasn't anything else to watch. But
right,
now
social media does all that for you.
Social media, like that's why, in my opinion, that's why the X Games has had such a struggle, is because like, why would I go to Aspen, Colorado, or why would I go watch this event on, say, ESPN? I think that's who owns it now. And why would I sit on a Saturday afternoon to watch that when I can watch every single one of those tricks on my phone anytime I want, always?
Right.
Like it's become so saturated, and new stuff's coming out every day. Like,
yeah, no, that's
attention's so divided too.
That's a big part of the problem. Yeah,
I feel like we could go on for hours about this, but
I shouldn't say that's a big part of the problem. That's a big part of the reason.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily a problem. Things just change and evolve, right?
Right, because nowadays, like you could argue that there's probably like guys like, say, Wes Williams, who's worked with Red Bull for, like, he's worked with Verb for 20 years plus. He's been with Red Bull. His work is some of the most beautiful, curated, like, cinematography that the sport has ever seen. But at the same time, here in 2026, an iPhone clip that's about 5 seconds long can get just as many views.
Oh, yeah.
So, oh, yeah. and now you have like, today they're doing the amateur supercross. Every single one of those, every single class, there's probably 5 or 10 kids that have a videographer that are trackside, that are making the reels, and the parents are shelling out to these guys that have a semi-professional camera setup and can put together a 15-second clip with some quick cuts. And like, yeah. but at the same time, that video, it got like, say it gets 10,000 views and 150 likes. Well, by next Sunday, it might as well have never happened. It's, you know what I mean? To me, it's like so disposable. And I don't love that we're going down that way, because like I grew up with magazines that I'd flipped through 10 times. And for that reason, the ads that were in those magazines, that's why they stayed relevant. That's why they're still in my head to this day. And like the significance and the staying power, I don't think that we're able to have that same conversion rate that we had in years previous. And I think that's, I guess, why we need the volume that we have, is that like nothing is significant, so we just need more.
Yeah, everybody's just consuming it so fast.
Yeah, it's difficult. We've kind of gone off on a little tangent here, but what are your thoughts on all that?
No, I think you're 100% right, and it makes it very difficult. Somebody who owns a television network will tell you, you know, it's a real challenge, you know, because what can you do that's different that makes somebody go, well, I'm going to actually tune in and watch the race as opposed to just waiting and watching it in 30-second clip later?
Right. Yeah, exactly. You know? And motocross is always, and motorsports in general, have always bumped their heads up against that as well. And I've told Davey Coombs to his face, like, on a Saturday afternoon, like, Dave, like, I'm a practitioner of the sport. I go out and ride my motorcycle. Awfully hard for me to set aside 4 hours on a Saturday to watch an outdoor national when, like, the track's calling. Dirt bike's not going to ride itself. I got to go get some throttle therapy. And I work Monday to Friday. So, you know what I mean? It's difficult for people to make that decision and tune in, even though they might be the most hardcore fan of them all.
Yeah, 100%. No, I totally get that. And, you know, that's why you have to bring things to the table as far as the television, you know, that becomes engaging if people say, I got to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. And we're able to do that, going back to what we were talking about before. That's why that Saturday night Supercross party did that, right? Sure. Whether you were a Supercross fan or not, you knew this was something worth watching. People tuned in and got hooked on it.
So what's the schedule look like for Ralph Shaheen going forward? Where can people keep up to all things Ralph Shaheen and speed sport and all that fun stuff? What's on the docket for you? You're always busy. I know you're always busy.
Yeah, I'm going to be very busy with the International Hot Rod Association this year. IHRA is involved in a wide variety of different forms of motorsports. I'm going to be calling offshore powerboat races for them. I've got the F1 powerboats. I'll be doing that for them. I just did a couple of snowmobile events for them. I'm doing their brand new stock car series, short track stock car series. It's debuting later this month. What else? I'll be doing the Rolex Monterey Motorsports reunion coming up at Laguna Seca in August. I think I'll be going to Goodwood this year in July over in England. Looking forward to that. There's always a variety of things that come up that I don't know today, but all of a sudden somebody calls you, hey, can you come do this or what have you? So there's always things like that that'll pop up. And then hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have World Supercross again in the fall.
There you go. Last question I have for you, which is a Luxon MX question for all of your chassis part needs, whether you need a brand new set of triple clamps, or if you need linkage components, engine hangers, they have the solutions to help your bike handle that much better. Luxon MX, check them out today. Big MX Radio. You can contact them and they'll save you some money by mentioning Big MX Radio. Ralph, what was the last job that you did before this was your job?
Ooh, now there's a great question.
Like, what was the last time that you did a job that, like, you were taking on so many announcing gigs, you're like, I can't do this no more. What was the last time you did a job?
Let's see. Well, I don't know exactly which one was the last one, but my first jobs, like early college jobs and that sort of thing, I worked as a stockroom help at a clothing store in a mall, and I was a busboy at the Red Robin in Sacramento. That actually was the last one I did before, because I went from that while I was in college. I started working at the local television station. So that was the last before I got into TV or anything to do with on the PA.
That had to have been a cool moment when, I don't know if you put in a 2 weeks, 2 minutes or 2 day notice, but hey, you're like, I'm going to pursue this whole TV thing and look where we're at.
Yeah, I did the 2 week notice thing, and it was, it's been an amazing ride. And I mean, all I can say with that is, you know, this was a passion choice of a career, right? You don't get into this thinking you're going to be rich. You hope you're going to make enough money to provide a quality of life, which thank God I've been able to do for me and my family. But ultimately, you do this solely out of passion. The ability to go to the races, work with people you really enjoy being with, sitting there calling these motorsports events all around the globe. It's been unbelievable. And I encourage people all the time, chase your passion, because if you do that and you're able to make a career out of it, you'll never work a day in your life.
Hey, that rings true, my friend, because I think people ask me why I've been able to be successful with this podcast. And I always tell them is that, like, I got my journeyman ticket in bricklaying at 19 years old. I started the podcast when I was 25. I didn't need this to make any money. And that's why it makes money. Right. I just did it because I loved it. And I keep doing it because I love it. And if all of my sponsors, which I love so much, they allow me to continue to do it and travel the world and go to France and England and Redbud and wherever else, I appreciate those companies to the end of the world. But if they pulled the plug on me tomorrow, I'd still put out a podcast next week, because I absolutely enjoy it. And, sounds like that rings true for yourself as well.
No doubt about it. I mean, look, there's no perfect days. There's no perfect job. I mean, there's always things, you know, standing in the middle of a frozen lake this weekend, it's a little chilly out there. Don't get me wrong, But you know what? At the end of the day, you're going, man, that was really cool. I got to stand in the middle of a frozen lake and call snowmobile drag races. This is great.
There you go. And then, like, you never thought you'd probably Google, do they have heated jackets? And they do. Makita makes them.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have one, unfortunately, but yeah, they do.
Yeah, we gotta get that hooked up. But Ralph, this has been an absolute pleasure. Like I said off the rip, I hope you become a repeat offender here on Big MX Radio. This was a lot of fun.
Come on, anytime, man. I love doing this kind of thing. Anytime.
Awesome, Ralph. Well, do not hang up just yet then. I'll, but for podcast sake, we'll cut things off right there.